Now we're holding on Ayin Hey Omud Bey's six lines from the bottom. So we're in the middle of discussing the question of, in the Mishnah, Rabbi Eliezer had said that a husband is able to be made for his wife's nedarim in advance, meaning before she even said them, and the Chachamim disagreed. So he said Rabbi Eliezer brought a Kal Vachomer to say that it should work. And the Chachamim said, the Kal Vachomer is all fine and good, but we have a pasuk to the contrary. The Gemara is actually, as we go through the discussion, we're going to see the possibility that maybe the Chachamim actually disagree with his Kal Vachomer, or maybe not. Maybe they do, after all, accept his Kal Vachomer. They just say that it's prevented by Exedus Akasim. So we'll get to that point as we go along. Anyway, so we're in the middle of Rabbi Eliezer. We're in the middle of asking the question, according to Rabbi Eliezer, that the husband can be made for in advance. Does that mean that the neder momentarily takes effect and then goes away, or that it never even takes effect in the first place, the nafkamina being if somebody else is machfis in that neder? So say, for example, she said, I'll be a nazira. If somebody else were to say, va'ani, and I, would his neder, would his nazirus be in effect or not? If we say that her nazirus was never chal, then there's nothing to be machfis in. If you say that for a moment there it was chal, As we talked about earlier, maybe there is an actual moment when it's chal, the amount of time that it would take him to say mufalach. Maybe we don't mean that there's an actual moment that it's chal, but still it had a certain, that we can talk about it having a certain validity before it disappears. Anyway, do we say that? And if we say that, then somebody else can be matfis in it, or do we say that not, and another person cannot be matfis in it? So we're in the middle of discussing that point, and we were trying to bring proofs one way or the other. So the Gemara says, Tashma, let's try to bring another proof. In a Braisa says that the Chachamim made another argument to Rabbi Eliezer. Omer loy le Rabbi Eliezer, umam mikveh shemales atmein mitumasan. They told him, madach mikveh, which causes anyone who's tamei to become tahor, but ein matzil ala tahorim milatamei. It does not prevent somebody who's tahor from becoming tamei. Now there's a few different explanations what it, and there's a few different gersois actually. The Ran brings no less than three different gersois in the Gemara over here. So first we'll go according to the gersa that we have in front of us in the Gemara, and then we'll go back and deal with the other gersois. So the point is that, for example, a person goes into the mikveh. Suppose that there is a sheretz in the mikveh. We don't say that him toveling in the mikveh prevents the sheretz from making him tamei. The fact is that if he's touching the sheretz in the mikveh, then he remains tamei. This is the famous idea that we say tovel the sheretz biyadoi, that we say, for example, if a person does tshuva and he's verbally saying that he regrets his averus, but he doesn't actually give them up, then it's like toveling while holding a sheretz, which is ineffective. So a mikveh doesn't prevent someone if a person is tahor and dips in the mikveh, and there's a sheretz in the mikveh, and he touches it while he's dipping, then he's going to become tameh. Yet the mikveh is able to be metahar somebody who was already tameh. So then, Odom shein malas atmein mutumasam. Well, then let's consider that a person is not able to prevent to make something tameh, to make it tahor. Namely, there's a din like this. Suppose that a person swallowed a keli, which is tameh. An example that it gives in the Mishnah, suppose a person swallowed a ring, which is tameh. We don't say that then when the person, we don't say that if now this person goes and tovels in the mikveh, where he becomes tahor, the ring will become tahor along with him. We don't say that. The ring remains tameh, and eventually when he throws it back up, or somehow it's removed from his body, it's still going to be tameh. So we're saying, in other words, a person is not able to make the tameh ring tahor by toveling while it's in his body. Eino din, so they say, shouldn't it be a kal vachomer? Shelo yatzel ala tahorin militameh. Shouldn't it be the case that it would be a, wouldn't it be a kal vachomer that he wouldn't prevent something tahor from becoming tamei? Meaning, what if we have the other way around? What if he swallowed the ring was tahor, then he went into an oil ames. So now he himself becomes tamei. Of course, he's in the same oil as a dead body. the ring that is inside his stomach does not become tummy because the fact that it's inside his body prevents it from becoming tummy. The fact that it's inside his body saves it from becoming tummy. So now, let's consider, say the Chachamim. So let's draw an analogy. You're saying that we're saying that a mikveh has a mikveh is more easily able to be metahar somebody who's tameh than to prevent somebody from becoming tameh, because we're saying that a mikveh is able to be metahar somebody tameh who dips in it. But on the other hand, that's if a tahar person dips in it, it won't prevent him from becoming tameh if he touches a sheretz in the mikveh. So now with a person, so what happens? We're saying the other way around. The ring is tahor. He prevents it from becoming tummy. He saves it from becoming tummy because it's inside his body. But on the other hand, he's not metahor it when it's already tummy. The fact that he swallowed it and then goes into the mikveh is not able to make it tahor. Now, we don't say a kavachomer. Now, we might have thought to say a kavachomer. We might have said that maybe, in fact, the person should, that in fact, we might have argued based on, we might have used a kavachomer from mikveh to person to say that by the same token, the person, in fact, when he swallows the ring, should cause it to become tahor when he dips in the mikveh. The fact that we don't say that, so that shows, in other words, that it's easier to, that shows, in other words, that we don't necessarily make such a kavachomer. So there's a big difference between something that was already tummy and something that hasn't yet become tummy. Well, then, by the same token, they say to Rabbi Eliezer, so what are you telling me a kavachomer? As far as nedarim, you're telling me that a neder that actually was already expressed and therefore already exists is stronger than a neder that doesn't yet exist because she hasn't yet said it. And therefore, if the husband has the ability to be mefer the first kind, halachas kama v'kama, he should have the ability to be mefer the second kind. The chacham would say, no, you see, for example, that when it comes to a mikveh, we see that when it comes to the halachas of tumah v'tahara, we don't say like that. So again, the Ran brings three different gersois over here of what the Gemara is saying. His first gersa, is that actually we're not even bringing a person in at all. According to the first gersa that he brings, the argument that they're making against Rabbi Eliezer is strictly from a mikveh itself. Namely, they tell him, let's consider, again, a mikveh makes somebody tahor when he toivels in it, but when a person is tahor and then dips in the mikveh, but then he touches a sheretz in the mikveh. But let's say, for example, it's true that if he touches a sheretz in the mikveh, it becomes tamei. But not only that, we're not saying that going to the mikveh prevents him from becoming tamei in the future. Obviously not. So you see again that you see again that just because you could say, yeah, you could argue the same thing. The tumah that he already has is stronger than the tumah he doesn't have yet. Yet we say the mikveh removes the tumah that already exists, but it doesn't prevent him from getting tumah in the future, whether we're talking about that he becomes tumah by touching a sheretz right there in the mikveh, or whether we're talking about that he becomes tumah from a sheretz or whatever kind of source of tumah after he gets out of the mikveh. What? Yeah. So we see it doesn't prevent him from becoming tummy after he gets out of the mikveh or while he's in the mikveh if he touches a sheretz. So we don't even need, so according to that girsa, according to the first girsa of the Ran, we don't even need to bring in the fact of the business about a person swallowing a ring, because from the din of toveling in a mikveh all alone, we see this point that a mikveh is matahar a person when he tovels in it, but it doesn't prevent him from becoming tahar when he's in the mikveh or in the future. So that's his first girsa. His second girsa is, like we said, his second girsa is what we said so far, which is also the girsa that we have printed in front of us in the Gemara, and a girsa that the Rosh and Tosfos discuss might be a better girsa. That we're contrasting a mikveh's ability to make somebody tahor with the person's ability to affect the ring that he swallowed, where the ring is tahor and he doesn't prevent it from becoming tameh, or where the ring is tahor and he does prevent it from becoming tameh when he goes into an oil mess, versus when the ring is tamei and he doesn't make it tahor by toveling in the mikveh. Then the Ran has a third girsa as well, which is that does the kavachomer the other way around. That starts with the person and then works back to the mikveh. Madach a person who is, so madach a person is able to prevent, who's not able to prevent the tummy ring from who's not able to make the tummy ring tahor. Again, he swallowed a tummy ring. He tovels in the mikveh, and yet he doesn't make the ring tahor. Nevertheless, on the other hand, if the ring is tahor, he prevents it from becoming tamei. How much more so, we could have argued that a mikveh which makes people tahor, how much more so it should prevent people who are tahor from ever becoming tamei. So according to the third gerusa would be basically the same as the second. It both includes the mikveh and the person, except that we're going in the opposite direction. We're starting from the person and then working back to the mikveh. In any case, the point is, according to whichever gerusa we follow, the point is, Shmamina loy chaylin. So you see from the Chachamim's argument to Rabbi Eliezer, now they disagree with Rabbi Eliezer, but they're trying to use an argument that they're trying to get Rabbi Eliezer to see things from their point of view. Therefore, obviously, they have to be following Rabbi Eliezer's own view of his own shitta. So given that he's saying the husband can be nefer in advance, and we're discussing the question, what does he mean when the husband is made for in advance? Is the neder chal for a little bit and then disappears, or is it never chal in the first place? Evidently, from their argument, you must say that Rabbi Eliezer says they're not chal at all, because after all, they're comparing it to Tumah Vatara. And Tumah Vatara, we don't say the Tumah exists for a moment and then disappears afterwards. So evidently, that at least they're understanding Rabbi Eliezer to be saying that the neder is never chal in the first place. So they're telling Rabbi Eliezer, you're saying that if the husband was mefer the wife's neder before she ever expressed the neder, you're saying the neder never has any time of validity, in which case then that would be similar to the case of Tumah Vatara, where also the thing never has a moment of becoming tumah in between. Yet we see that a kavah chomer like that does not work when it comes to Hilchos Tumah Vatara. So therefore, why should it work when it comes to Nedarim? An interesting side point over here is an interesting thing that Achronim discuss. When a person goes to the mikveh, what is it that makes him tahor? Is it the going into the mikveh, the dipping in the mikveh that makes him tahor? Or the Kesef Mishnah has an interesting understanding in the Rambam that actually it's not the dipping in the mikveh that makes the person tahor, it's actually the person coming out of the mikveh that makes him tahor. So they discuss how that would fit with our Gemara over here. In particular, in our Gemara, anyway, when we're talking about the person being in the mikveh and becoming tameh, the Rosh understands that we could be talking about, let's say, imagine that while he's in the mikveh, he's touching a sheretz with one hand, and then with the other hand, he's touching a keli, which is partly in the water and partly out of the water. So it's not completely in the water, therefore it's not becoming tahor. And he's touching a sheretz, and then at the same time, he's touching his keli, and therefore he's metame the keli. Okay, actually, the Rashash asks on that. If a person is metame from a sheretz, he can't be metame a keli. He's only a rishon metoma, so he explains that we're talking about, let's say, he was touching a zav while he was in the mitzvah. Whatever the case, the point is, there's an interesting point over here that maybe, in fact, the person only becomes tahor when he exits the mikveh, not when he's in the mikveh. And they discuss, in fact, Achronim discuss that how that would fit with our Gemara. One interesting thing. So there is quite a bit of interesting discussion about the ins and outs of that, of the Kesef Mishnah. The Rebbe actually brings in a letter. He says there's somebody who gathered together in a sefer that was printed before the war that asked a whole bunch of questions on the Kesef Mishnah and how can we accept it. On the other hand, there's a sicha where the Rebbe explains that the fact is the Kesef Mishnah says it. We have to respect what he says. And there's a lesson in an Avodas Hashem that the idea is it's not just the dipping in the mikveh which represents the bittul to Hashem, which makes the person tahor. The question is, what happens when the person is coming out back into the world, whether he still has that, whether he's still in that state of tara, whether he's now able to be poil on the world and work on making it a jidab tachtonim, that's where we see the real tara is. There's actually something very similar that Rav Shamsha Nafal Hirsch says in his commentary on Chumash when he discusses the deeper idea behind tevilah. Anyway, getting back to the Gemara, so again, based on this argument that the Chachamim are using to Rabbi Eliezer, it sounds like they're understanding him to mean that, in fact, that the neder never is chal in the first place, and therefore they're drawing an analogy the same way as, for example, the tuma is never chal on this ring in the first place. The person, let's say, swallowed the tohor ring. We don't say it becomes tome momentarily while it's in his stomach and then becomes tohor. We just say it remains tohor the whole time. So, and yet we see that we can't use that as a basis for a kal vachomer to say by the same token that a mikveh should accomplish the same thing proactively. So why should it work by nedarim? But that shows, the fact that they're making that argument shows that they understand Rabbi Eliezer to be saying that the neder is never chal. Well, the Gemara says, okay, but Ema Sefer, but look at the next part of the Braisa, and you'll see, on the contrary, the Braisa continues, Omru Loi Rabbi Eliezer, that the Chachamim made another argument against Rabbi Eliezer. They said, you're saying, Rabbi Eliezer, your premise is that it's easier to be Mevatel, something that doesn't exist. And therefore, you're saying, if you can be mevatel a neder that already exists, how much more so you can be mevatel a neder that doesn't yet exist? So they argue to him, im matbilin kli tome litaher. After all, if you're toveling a keli which is tome and making it toher thereby, yatbilu kli lichshi tome litaher, would you say by a kal vachomer that you can tovel a keli that proactively, that now you're toveling it in advance, so that later on, when it becomes tuma, then when it becomes tome, then it should become tahor? Obviously not. Obviously we don't say that. Even you, Rabbi Eliezer, don't hold of such a thing. So your kal vachomer doesn't really work. So now, shema min achaylin. Now, based on that argument that the Chachamim are saying, it sounds like they're understanding Rabbi Eliezer to be saying that the nedarim are chal. Because after all, what are they saying? It's like toveling a keli. What would we say? Hypothetically, we would say that if you tovel a keli, then it makes it that net now when it later on touches a source of tumah. Hypothetically, it becomes tumah for a moment and then the tumah disappears. But obviously we don't say that. Well, that would mean, though, that they understand it to mean that Rabbi Eliezer that Rabbi Eliezer's kal vachomer in the case of nedarim would require us to say that the neder exists for a moment. So then in that case, that shows they do hold that way, that they understand Rabbi Eliezer to be holding that way. So which is it? From the Braisa itself, from the different arguments that the Chachamim are making against Rabbi Eliezer, you could go either way. So the Gemara answers, Amri, the Bnei HaYeshiva answered, So the Gemara says Shema Min Achaylin. So that shows that it is Chal. So the answer is, the Gemara says, Amri, the Bnei HaYeshiva said no. What happened over here was, Rabbanan loy kaini lahoin b'taymei de Rabbi Eliezer. What happened is, when the Chachamim are discussing this with Rabbi Eliezer, they themselves were not certain of Rabbi Eliezer's position. They knew that Rabbi Eliezer had said that the husband can be made for the nedarim in advance. They were having the exact same question that the Gemara started with over here. When we say that he's made for the neder, is it that he's made for it and it never takes effect in the first place, or is it that it takes effect and then is immediately bottled? The Chachamim, arguing against Rabbi Eliezer, themselves were uncertain what Rabbi Eliezer holds about that because he didn't specify. So therefore, they wanted to give him both arguments. So they're telling him like this. My Svirulach. They're asking him, look, how do you hold? If you hold that the neder is chal for a moment and then becomes bottle, such that, as we said, if somebody else is matkis in that neder, then they're able to do that. Well then, to have kli to yotach, then we're going to slug you up by the case of the keli, the last braisa, the last part of the braisa that we just mentioned, that you don't say that you tovel a keli and that prevents it from becoming tumah in the future, the same way you can't, even though you could argue that tumah that has not yet come to pass is weaker than tumah that already exists. Yet we say that a mikveh can remove the tumah that already exists, but it can't prevent tumah from being chal in the future. So then that would be like a keli. A keli, hypothetically, you would say becomes tomei for a moment and then tahor. Obviously, you're not saying that. So how could you say that the neder is chal for the moment and then becomes bottle as the result of, then how could you say that the neder is bottle as a result of his afara in advance? And if you don't hold that they're chal to have a mikveh to yotach, then we can slug you up from the earlier part of the braisa involving the mikveh, where again we don't make a kal vachomer over there, whether it's a kal vachomer between a mikveh and a person, or within a mikveh itself, or whatever, however the three different gersos that we go according to. So we don't say, again, now, we don't say that a mikveh prevents a person from becoming tameh when he tovels in it if there's a sheretz in there. Or we don't say that a person who swallows a ring, which is tameh, makes it become tahor when he tovels, etc. The whole argument that we made. So then we could compare it to that, where there's no tumah in the first place, or where there's no tahara in the first place, and therefore that would be the equivalent of the neder never being chal. So either way, they're telling Rabbi Eliezer, no matter how you hold in this ibaya, in this question that is driving the whole sugya over here, we have a way of slugging up your kavachon. So we still haven't proved one way or the other what Rabbi Eliezer holds, because we can say that even the Chachamim themselves were unsure what he holds, and therefore they want to cover all their bases by bringing him various arguments. So the Gemara says, Tashma, let's try to bring another proof. The Braitha continues, Amar lahem Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer says, to back up his position, he says, I'll give you a different Kavach Chomer. Umazroyim tmeim, madach, consider the case of seeds that are tamei. And the fact is, kivin shazoran bakarka, if you take these tamei seeds and plant them in the ground, tahurin, they become tahur. And the Ran says we have a pasuk that shows us that point. So then, zruim v'omim l'kol shekin, how much more so we know that when you have seeds that are already planted, if tuma touches them while they're growing, how much more so, then they don't become tamei. And the fact is, he says to the Chachamim, look, the fact that when you plant a seed, it becomes tahor, fine, you have a pasuk for that. But where do we get the fact that a seed remains tahor while it's growing if tumah touches it? You must get it from this kind of kavachomer. Well, if you accept that kavachomer when it comes to seeds, then why can't you accept it when it comes to, when we use the same kavachomer as far as nedarim? Again, we would say the same thing. The tumah that already exists on the seeds is able to become tahor by planting them, and kavachomer that the tumah that doesn't yet exist on them, that them being planted in the ground prevents them from becoming tamei. Well, so you see that something that exists, the tumah that exists, is stronger than the tumah that doesn't yet exist, and we make the kavachomer and we say that both of them are tahor when it's planted in the ground. So why can't we say the same thing with nedarim? So, shmamin oloi chaylin. So, doesn't that demonstrate then that Rabbi Eliezer must hold, in the case of the nedarim, that they're not chal at all? The same way as when you plant the seeds, but you don't say if tumah touches them while they're planted, you don't say they become tameh momentarily and then the tumah disappears. And the Ran says it has to be that way, because if you were to say that the tumah disappears, what do you mean? How would it disappear? There's nothing that happens to it to make it disappear. If it became tameh while it was planted in the ground, it would remain tameh. Because there's nothing that happens to it to take away the tumah. So actually, Rabbi Akiva Eger asks on that, and he says that, one second, you could say that maybe they do become tameh, and then right away, since they're planted in the ground, then they become tahor right away again. How do you know takanot? How do you know Rabbi Eliezer doesn't hold that that's the mechanism? They become tamei for a moment, and then they become tahor, right away without having to do anything to them. So that's Rabbi Akiva Eger asks the question. So the Or Sameach has a long discussion about it, where he says there can be a difference between whether you did something that requires machshava or not. The fact is, seeds become tahor whether you intended to plant them or not, as opposed to when it comes to toveling something, you need a certain degree of kavana when it comes to toveling, at least for certain kinds of cases of dipping in the mikveh. So in any case, the point is that if we're drawing a comparison with seeds in the ground, we're saying they never become tamei. You can't say that they become tamei while they're in the ground and then after a moment they become tahor. They evidently never become tamei in the first place. Well, by the same logic, if Rabbi Eliezer is using that to back up his opinion, then we would have to say that it would mean that the nedarim are never chal in the first place. So the Gemara says, So good, that proves it. Shmamina loy chaylin, that shows that according to Rabbi Eliezer, he would say the Nedarim are not chal in the first place. So applying that to the Nafamina, we said before, if the wife were to make a neder, let's say that I will be a Nazir, and somebody else, and he then says Vani, then according to Rabbi Eliezer, the other person does not become a neder because this neder of hers had no period when it was ever valid because he had been made through it in advance, and it never had a time when it would actually be effective. Okay. So the Gemara asks, "Rabbanon le'dashi kalachim." Now, though, are you telling me from all of this discussion, it seems to come out that the Chachamim don't dash in the kalachimer? It sounds like the Chachamim are not accepting the basic concept of a kalachimer between something that already exists and something that doesn't exist yet. Because all this time in the Brisis, they're arguing to him and they're saying that you see that it doesn't, that such a kavachomer doesn't work by mikveh. You see that such a kavachomer doesn't work by a person who tovels in a mikveh or goes into an oil amass. You see it doesn't work by tovel and kalim in a mikveh. Rabbi Eliezer himself brings them back a kavachomer involving seeds. So the bottom line is, it sounds like so far the Chachamim don't even accept such a kavachomer. Well, the question is, how could we say that? Bahatanya, we have a braisa that shows that we're, and the Ran points out, this braisa that we're going to bring is stronger than the braisa with the seeds, because conceivably it could be that the Chachamim might hold that seeds, while they're growing, are able to become Tomei. There's a Yerushalmi that says that actually not, that even the Chachamim would agree that they can't become Tomei while they're growing, for the simple reason that then you never have plants that are Tahor. Inevitably, you have vermin of various kinds, including Shemona Shirotzin, crawl around among the plants and die there, and sometimes die there. If you're going to say that that they can become Tomei while they're attached to the ground, no, we can never assume that any growing plant is Tahor. We'd have to assume it's always Tomei. But nevertheless, the Gemara over here is not dealing with that. So the Ran says, conceivably, we could understand the Chachamim to be saying that, yes, they would say, as a matter of fact, seeds that are growing in the ground can conceivably become Tomei while they're attached to the ground. True, when you plant them, they become Tahor, but not necessarily does that mean that while they're growing, if they touch a source of Tumah, that they shouldn't become Tomei. Therefore, the Gemara instead is going to bring a proof from a case involving an Omer HaYivriya, where everybody agrees with the din that we're going to learn in the following Braisa. So the Braisa says, Yocho Yimko Odmas Bitek Shi Naira. You would think that, now we know the Torah tells us in Parshas Mishpatim that a man can sell his daughter as a maidservant, and we know he can do that when she's a katana. So now you would think, says the Braisa, that he could do it when she's a Naira as well. And the answer is that no. Amarta Kavachomer. You can show by a Kavachomer that it's not so, that he can't. Mechura kvar yotza, because what happens when a girl was sold as an Omer HaYivriya when she was a katana, before she developed Shtei Sairus? The din is, as soon as she develops Shtei Sairus, automatically she goes free. And we know that from a posuk that says, V'yotza chinam ein kosef. The posuk says she goes out for free without paying any money, and we learn that that means that there's an extra thing that allows her to go free without having to pay anything more than an evidivri, namely if she develops shtei sairus. So when she's already sold, if she was sold a year or a few years or whatever earlier, when the 6 years aren't up yet, but she develops shtei sairus, right away then she becomes, right away she goes free, So if she hasn't been sold yet, then a kavachomer will tell us how much more so that her father has no right to sell her. In other words, even though we do say, as we learned in Ksubas, and as we learned several times in Armasechta, that during the time of her nairus, her father still has a certain rishus over her, but that rishus does not extend to the extent of being able to sell her as an Omer HaYivri. Well, so we see the Chachamim do accept that kind of kavachomer. So we see that there's something that was already chal versus something that's not, and we say the thing that was chal is stronger, and we can darsh in a kavachomer from it for something that has not yet been chal, because we're saying, in other words, that we can make a kavachomer that if when she developed, that if when she's already been sold, where the selling already exists, then she's able to go free with simanim, how much more so when the sale does not yet exist, that it shouldn't be able to take effect. So we see the Chachamim accept that kind of kavachomer. So why don't they use the same? Why don't they accept the same kind of kavachomer when it comes to Afaras Nedarim? Okay. So the Gemara answers, Ein, as a matter of fact, yes. But Alma Darshi Kavachomer, as a matter of fact, yes. Generally speaking, the Chachamim will accept such a Kavachomer, as we have by the Naira and maybe even by the seeds as well. The shiny hocha, the omakra, isha hikimeno, the isha yifirenu. It's different over here because of the posit that they quoted in the Mishnah that says, where the posit says her husband can be makayim the neder, or her husband can be made for the neder, from which we learn, esha bolachal hokin, bolachal hofer, only when you have a neder that has come to the point of hakama, where you can be makayim the neder, and for that, it definitely everybody agrees that the neder has to have been expressed already for the reasons that we talked about previously. We had several different reasons that the Rishonim gave why it is so, but that's how it is. Even Rabbi Eliezer does agree you can't be makayim a neder before it was expressed, whether because we don't know that, whether because it's too weak at that point to be makayim, or because we don't know she might end up making a neder that he wants to be, that he doesn't want to be makayim, and therefore he can't be makayim in advance, or because the neder doesn't yet exist, or the Rashash even brings us a sifri that actually learns from the psukim that you can't, whatever the case. So the Chachamim say from the Hekesh that only a neder that is able to be makuyim is able to be mufer. The eschaloi bolachal hakim, but a neder that is not yet in the position of being able to do hakama because it hasn't been said yet, loy bolachal hofer, then the chachamim will say you can't be made for it either. So the chachamim will say, sure, Rabbi Eliezer, you have a great kavachomer going over there, but Gzeres HaKosov blocks it. So now the Ran asks, well, in that case then, so if the Chachamim accept the Kavachomer, basically, and they're only saying where there's a posuk against it, then they don't accept it, then Taka, the Kavachomers that they brought, but when they tried to slug up Rabbi Eliezer's Kavachomer, and they said, for example, from the case of the mikveh, of the person toveling in the mikveh, or the person swallowing a ring, or the person toveling kalim in the mikveh, Taka, why don't they say, well, the Kavachomer, we do have a Kavachomer between something that doesn't exist yet and something that already exists, as we see with the Naira Mairasa, so then they should say that it does work in those cases. We should, in fact, say that the mikveh should prevent the person from becoming Tomei even if he touches a sheretz in it, or that the mikveh should be able to be Matahar, the Tomei ring, even though the person has it inside his stomach, etc. The reason is, the Ran says, in fact, we have psukim for those cases as well. We have a posuk that tells us that when a person touches a sheretz in a mikveh, he becomes tameh. We have another posuk also that teaches us that a person, that if a person has a tohor ring inside his body, it doesn't become tameh when he goes into an oil mess. So therefore, so we see, in other words, the Chachamim are telling Rabbi Eliezer, as much as you may have a kavachomer, when you have a posuk that contradicts the kavachomer, then we have to set aside the kavachomer in favor of the posuk. So in all these cases, we have a posuk. And therefore, they're telling him in this case also, given that we have a posuk, then you should have to agree with us also that in fact it's impossible to be made for these nedarim because of those words, isha yikimenu v'isha yifirenu, which teaches us that there's a similarity between them. Or we learned yesterday actually that the Chassam Sofer learns it's not literally a hekesh. The Ran says elsewhere in the Masechta that it's not a real hekesh, because the fact is we know there are a number of differences between Akama and Afara. So the Chassam Sofer understands it. It's more of the Torah is telling us a prerequisite. The prerequisite for Hafara is that there has to have been possible Hakama before that, and in this case there's not, because the neder had never been expressed yet. Okay. Mishnah says, Afaras nedarim kol hayom. The husband or the father, or in the case of the arusa, both of them together, afaras nedarim can take place the entire day, meaning until it gets dark. Technically, you have, you know, strictly speaking, in halacha, there's a certain moment when day ends and night begins. We have a suffix whether that time is shtir or tzeitzik achavim, or sometime between them, which is why, as far as Shabbos and Yom Tov, we're machmir in both directions. We start Shabbos by shtir, or a little before shtir, because of Tosfos Shabbos, and we end it after tzeis. In theory, it would be an exact 24-hour thing from when one day ends until the next day ends. So now, when we say kol hayom, we mean until that time when the day would actually end. And the Mishnah says, Yesh b'davar l'hokol l'hachmer. There's a kula and a chumra in it. Which means, the Ran says, we don't mean a real, first of all, we don't mean the day she made the neder. Strictly speaking, as we said before, it's actually the day that the father or the husband hears the neder. So if she makes the neder and the husband or the father only finds about it a few days later, the clock starts ticking only when he hears about it. Anyway, when we say lahokol lahachmer, the Ram says, we don't mean literally to be makel or to be machmer. There's no real kula and chumra that we can talk about over here. We mean that sometimes the time that's available for the hafaras nedarim is longer if the neder was made right after it got dark on the previous day, and sometimes lahachmer, sometimes you have a very short window of opportunity. That's what the Mishnah means. So Ketzad, what does this mean? How do you have lahokol lahachmer? How do you sometimes have less time and sometimes more? Nadra b'leilis Shabbos, suppose she made the neder on Friday night after it got dark. So then yofer b'leilis Shabbos or v'yema Shabbos ad shetechshach. So then he's able to be nafer the entire rest of Friday night, as well as the entire Shabbos day until it gets dark, until Shabbos ends. Vice versa, nodra im chashecha. On the other hand, if she makes the neder right before it becomes dark, nafer ad shel techshach, then he can only be nafer until it gets dark, shein choshcha v'lahafer, and in yochel lahafer, because if it gets dark and he's not nafer, then he's not going to be able to be nafer anymore. Now, the Ran explains, why is the Mishnah saying specifically the case where she made the neder on Shabbos? Wouldn't the same thing apply if it was any other day of the week? So the Ram says, because the Mishnah wants to, we're going to learn the next time, Be'ez Hashem, we'll learn on Daf Ein Zayin, we're going to talk about that normally, of course, you're not allowed to do Atoras Nedarim on Shabbos, but the husband or the father is able to be Nefer Nedarim on Shabbos, as we'll talk about in the Gemara on Daf Ein Zayin. It's actually also a Mishnah at the end of the last Mishnah in the Sefer Shabbos. Because there's coming a deadline, and if he's not made for it on Shabbos, then he's not going to be able to be made for it in the future. So therefore, our Mishnah uses as an example the case where she made the neder on Shabbos to stress that point, that therefore he's going to be able to be made for on Shabbos, even though normally we should say, well, how should he be able to be made for if not even a neder that is necessarily impinging on Shabbos? Suppose she makes a neder. Imagine she makes a neder that I won't do a certain malacha. It's not relevant to Shabbos anyhow. Because you can't do that malacha on Shabbos anyhow. And yet we're saying that he can be made for it on Shabbos because otherwise the time will pass. So therefore, our Mishnah uses the example where she made the neder on Shabbos in order to stress that point. And the Ram says that is also why the last line of the Mishnah uses the expression, why does it say mefer ad shalei techshach? Why does it say he can be mefer until it gets dark? After all, the Mishnah is trying to show us the Chumrah, so it should say, Einem Mefer Ela Ad Shetechshach. It should say, he can only be Mefer until it gets dark. The Ran says, the point is, the Mishnah wants to stress, why is it that you can be Mefer Nedarim on Shabbos? Because he only has Shein Choshcha V'Lehefer, and Yochel Lahafer, because if it gets dark and he's not Mefer, then he won't be able to. Therefore, the Mishnah is putting it in a positive way, he better be Mefer before it gets dark, because otherwise it's going to be too late. So the Gemara says, Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, Hafaras Nedarim Kol HaYoyim, Hafaras Nedarim can be any time during the day, as we said in the Mishnah. However, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, Amru, Ma'as Les. There's a Girsa, in fact, that Tosefta has, that the first line of this Braisa is according to Rebbe. That this that we say, Hafaras Nedarim Kol HaYoyim, would be according to Rebbe. Anyway, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, Amru, Ma'as Les. Those two, Tanoim, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, say that he has 24 hours. So they disagree with our Mishnah that he only has until it gets dark. They say you always have 24 hours. So the Gemara says, my time at the Tanakama. Why does the Tanakama say that you have only until it gets dark? The answer is because Amakura b'yoyim shomai. Because the Pasuk says, on the day that he hears. Well, after it gets dark, it's already the next day. V'rabbanan my time ayu. What about now these other two chachamim, the Rabbi Yosi ben Yehuda and Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon, why do they disagree? They say, dichtiv mi yoim el yoim, because the pasuk says from day to day, implying that you have from one day to the next. You have from the beginning of one day to the beginning of the next day, or from the middle of one day to the middle of the next day. So 24 hours. In fact, it's interesting. Rashi on the Pasuk actually says that, Rashi on the Pasuk says a line that even though it says miyoim el yoim, and you would think that it means, you would think then that it means 24 hours, nevertheless, in fact, it doesn't mean that. Miyoim el yoim itself means only until the end of that day. And everybody asks on Rashi that he seems to be contradicting our Gemara over here. Yeah, because in our Gemara over here, we're saying that the fact is the expression Rashi uses is, you shouldn't think that miyoim el yoim means less. Therefore, it says miyoim el yoim, meaning that he only has until it gets dark. So everybody asks on him. In our Gemara, it seems to be saying just the opposite. Miyoim el yoim would say 24 hours. Not like Rashi is saying that miyoim el yoim means only until the end of that day. So there's a huge number of explanations, including maybe that there's obviously one simple answer is that there's a Torah Sofer in Rashi, but there's a variety of other answers as well, one of them being that Rashi is maybe basing himself on a Yerushalmi rather than Or Gemara, and then there are different answers that reconcile Rashi with Or Gemara. Anyway, okay, so the Gemara says, well, Tanakama hoksin miyoim oyoim, knew, what is a Tanakama doing with the word miyoim oyoim? Which we said, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda, and Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon make that to mean 24 hours. He said, the Gemara says, it's just, the Tanakhama would say, you need that for a different purpose. The E, be Yom Shamai, if we only had the word be Yom Shamai, have Amina, be Mama Ein, Belel Yaloi. You would think, now the word Yom has two meanings. A Yom can mean a 24 hour period. It can also mean day as opposed to night. So if we only had the word B'yom Shamai, you would think that you can only be made for Nedarim only by day, not by night. Maybe if she makes the Neder at night, maybe you can't be made for that night, only the next morning. Maybe the word Yom means in the limited sense, the daytime. Siv, M'yom O'yom, therefore the Pasuk says M'yom O'yom to clarify that whether it's daytime or night, as long as it is before it gets dark, then you can be made for. In fact, one of the interesting explanations on Rashi, to explain that Rashi on the Pasuk, is that the Gemara is saying that maybe miyoim el yoim would mean that you have the entire oina when the neder was made. You know, when it comes to the halachas of neder, the halachas of taras and mishpacha, we have the concept of oina, either a day or a night. You have, for example, she becomes neder during the daytime, and that whole day period is considered an oina. And the same thing with the nighttime. So maybe you would say, maybe the Gemara is saying, maybe you would have understood, you would have understood the word b'yom shamay to mean such a thing, a 12-hour period, either day or night. Therefore, the word miyoim oyoim clarifies that no, it does mean you have the entire day. You're not limited to only one oina, but the deadline is when it gets dark, because then already it's the next day. Okay, the Gemara says, "Omando omam yoim o yoim oksib yoim shamay." What about according to the two Tanoim? It says miyoim o yoim, and that's from that they're learning 24 hours. So what are they doing with the words yoim shamay? The answer is itzrich. They say you would need to teach it something else. The iksid miyoim o yoim. They would say if it only said miyoim o yoim, have amin mechad b'shabal, chad b'shabal leifala. Maybe it means maybe you have an entire week. From a day until the same kind of day a few days later. So in other words, today is Sunday. Therefore, you have until the next day like that, meaning the next Sunday, in order to be nether. And that's not so. Even they don't say you have a week. Therefore, ksiv v'yom shamay. Therefore, according to them, that is why the pasuk says v'yom shamay, to limit him to one day. But nevertheless, they say he's limited to 24 hours, but not less than that. So the Gemara says, Amar Shimon Pazi, Amar Shimon Levi, Ein Halacha Ka'isa Hazum. The Halacha is not like that pair of Tanoim. The Halacha is like the Tanakhama and like the Tana of our Mishnah that you only have until it gets dark. Now, why would he need to say that the Halacha is not like them? So the Rosh explains, because after all, I mean, they seem to have, first of all, they're two against one. If we had in the Braisa that it's Zebi against the two of them, maybe we would say the Halacha is like the two of them against him. Besides which, they do have a very logical point. You do have the word miyoim el yoim, and it's a little bit of a doichik to say that means that you have both the day and the night. Or both the night and the day, as the case may be. So therefore, you would have thought to say that the halacha is like them, and therefore Rabbi Shlomo ben Levi has to inform us that not so. On the other hand, the Rosh brings a different gusa that somebody shown him had, that he says halacha kosa azum, that Rabbi Shlomo ben Levi is saying the halacha is like that pair of tanoim. So the Gemara continues. The Gemara brings now something as far as atoras the darim. Now, according to the Ran, According to the, well, first, before we get to that, Levi Sover Lamebed Kahani Tanoi, Levi thought to do like these Tanoim, like Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon, and allow 24 hours. Omale Rab, so Rab tells him, Hochi Omer Chavivi, you should know that my uncle, which is Rabbi Chia, said, Ein Halacha Kaisa Azug, the Halacha is not like that pair of Chacham. So according to the Gius that we have in front of us, that's exactly what it is. Levi thought that since they seem to have a more logical argument, and because they're two against one, the halacha ought to be like them. And Rab informs him the halacha is not like them. The halacha is like the Tana Kama and like the Tana of our Mishnah that you only have until Shkia. According to the Rosh's Gilsa, that according to the Rosh's alternate Gilsa, Halacha Kosa Azug, then it would be the other way around. That Levi thought that you have to follow the Tanoim, the Tana of the Mishnah, and the Tanakama of the Braisa, and Rab informs him that in fact Rav Chiya said the Halacha is not like those Chachamim, but rather like the Chachamim of the Braisa, Rav Yosef of Yehuda, and Rav Elazar of Shimon, that you actually have 24 hours. So now the Gemara brings in something else, which, according to the Ran, this next piece is just by the way. Having mentioned Rav's opinion about Haforas Nedarim, how long you have, so incidentally, the Gemara brings something else about how the Chachamim would be Matir Nedar when it comes to Haforas Nedarim rather than Haforim. And then we'll talk in a minute, the Rosh has a different explanation of what this piece is doing. So the Gemara says, Chia bar Rav shodi gira ubodik. Chia bar Rav would shoot arrows and would examine. So meaning, in other words, so the Ran explains like this. If people would come to Chiya Bar Rav to be Matir Neder, he wouldn't necessarily give them his full attention. He might even be shooting arrows or doing some other kind of malacha while he's listening to them. The point is, in other words, that he held, you don't really need to think much into the Haforas Nedarim, into our Toras Nedarim, because we learned earlier in the Masechta, there's two major ways of being Matir and Neder. There's Pesach and there's Charata. So Pesach, you have to consider carefully. You have to think of some consequence of the Neder that the person might not have thought of and ask him, did you realize that consequence when you made the Neder? On the other hand, Charata doesn't really require all of that. Charata is just you ask him, do you regret having made this Neder? So now, what we're saying here, according to the Ran's understanding, is that Chiya Bar Rav would just ask the person, are you having Charata? So you don't really need to think very much into it. So therefore, Chiya Bar Rav could even be doing other kinds of things, such as archery, while he's listening to the person. And then the person is saying, yes, I'm Mescharet, and Chiya Bar Rav is Matur on that basis. He doesn't really need to give it his full attention, because Charata doesn't really require much attention. The person says, I have Charata, then that's that. Rabba Bar Rav Huna would sometimes sit or sometimes stand. In other words, he also wasn't particularly careful. He also held that you can use Charata, and therefore he didn't make a point of he dafka has to be sitting to give it his full attention, or he dafka has to be standing, it would just be however he happened to be at the moment. And then a different explanation, actually, Shitta Mukabetsis brings, is he would say, fine, I'm not going to go as far as Chiya Bar Rav to say that you could be doing something else while you're being Matir Neder. Fine, you at least have to give it attention to the extent that you're not doing something else in the middle, in between, like shooting arrows. But on the other hand, you don't dafka need to be standing or sitting, as the case may be. Now, that's all according to the Ran's explanation. The Rosh brings two other possible explanations. One is that the Gemara later on Ein Zayin Omer Beis, is going to discuss the question of whether you need to be sitting or standing when the Gemara is going to be discussing later whether you can use Charata or whether you dafka need a Pesach and do you have to be standing or do you have to be sitting? So now, according to that, the Rosh says this piece doesn't really belong here. It belongs a block later when we discuss that point of whether you need Pesach or Charata. Then, though, the Ran brings a very interesting idea that relates to, again, he said he brought a girsa from some Rishonim that said that we said the halacha is like Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon. According to that, then, when we say that Chiya Bar Rav would shoot arrows or Rabba Bar Rav Huna would be standing and sitting, according to that, Rather, the Rosh explains what we're saying is they were following the idea that the halacha is like those two tanoim. Therefore, they said you have 24 hours. So Chiya Barav, for example, if his wife made a neder, he wouldn't be particular, I have to be made for it right away, because he follows the opinion of these two tanoim who say that you have full 24 hours. So therefore, he might wait and say, you know what, then I'm in no hurry to be made for the nether. Let my wife sit and stew in it for a while and think that I might end up being Makayim the nether. I have 24 hours after all. So he would shoot an arrow in order to note for himself what time it is, what the exact time was when the nether was made. So he knows now when he sees the shadow of the arrow pointing in the same direction, just under 24 hours later, then he can be Matu the nether. So according to that, then, it is directly connected with what we said before. We said that Rabbi Yosi ben Yehuda and Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon say you have 24 hours. And now we would have the example of Chiya Barav, who would actually follow that in practice and say that he has 24 hours, and therefore he'd shoot an arrow in order to note it, in order to make a mark for himself what time it is, so he knows what time, till what time he has to be matur the nether. And similarly, Rabbi Bar Avuna, we would say, would be standing or sitting, the same thing. In other words, he would stand up to notice how long is his shadow at that point, then he would sit back down, and then he knows that 24 hours later, when his shadow is almost the same length, or is almost in the same position, then he knows that's the last moment he has to be made for the nether. There's an interesting thing, the Shalmei Nedarim, which is an Acharon who wrote an important Pirush on Nedarim, printed 150 or so years ago, he has a very interesting chap on this. He says he mentioned this to a number of great Chachamim of his times, and they liked this idea a lot. Rabbi Bar Avuna, in particular, we learned earlier in the Masechta when we had a whole discussion about whether you can use Pesach or whether you can use Charota to be Matir and Neder, or whether you Davka need Pesach. We said over there that Rabbi Bar Avuna kind of takes a middle ground. He says you can't use only Charota, but you don't need such a strong Pesach either. So based on that, then, now the Gemara is saying that he would sort of be halfway between standing and sitting. Since on the one hand, you can't use Charota exclusively, therefore he can't only be standing, he needs to pay attention to a certain Pesach. On the other hand, since you don't need a full-fledged Pesach, according to him, then therefore you don't need to be fully sitting, you can be like standing part of the time, sitting part of the time, and you can still be Matur Neder on that basis. And the Shalmei Nedarim says, he mentioned that to a number of Chachamim of his time, and they liked this idea a lot. They said it really fits with that Gemara earlier.